Hi, my name is Racheli Lufglass. Welcome to Torah Simecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today we will be studying Sefer Nehemiah Perek Dalet. Yesterday we learned of Nehemiah's excellent execution skills and how he organized the wall building project, all the while motivating volunteers and fending off opposition. Today we're going to learn a very powerful story of faith and practical solutions of motivation and the delegation of tasks as Nehemiah will continue to prove himself as a really excellent leader. Okay, Pasuk Aleph. Vayhi kasher shama Sanballat v'tovia v'harabim v'hamonim v'ashdodim. When all the hooligans heard ki alta arucha l'chamot Yerushalayim, that the wall building was continuing and that they actually had done quite a bit, ki echelu ha-pirutzim l'hisatem, and when they found out that the people who were previously very vulnerable are now more closed in and fortified, they are infuriated. They all banded together, all these different enemies, and they came together to somehow hurt the Jewish people. Now, this word to'ah, according to Rashi, means a destruction. Ebenezer thinks that they're just looking to confuse the Jewish people, but it also can mean to somehow get the Jewish people to wander or stray from their objective. Similar to the way Yosef, in the story of Yosef, the word to'ah is used when he was like looking for his brothers, that he wanders somehow. Rabag claims that the word to'ah is somehow a plan of the enemies to try to fool the Jews to overturn their own initiative. Okay, Pasuk Gimel, v'nitpalel el Elokeinu v'na'amid mishmar aleihem yomam v'alayla mipneihem. So basically the classic response of the Jewish people has always been tefillah and effort, which in this case is davening and war prep. And they turn to God despite the fact that they set up shifts of security around them, and they go on to say and to cry out to Nehemiah and to God as well, saying, kashal koach hasabal, the porters who are doing all the schlepping, they are very weakened physically. V'afar, and the mud and the clay are that we still need to utilize to build is enormous, the amount. We can no longer build this wall, neither physically or, according to Rashi, mentally. We're really just spent. Because our enemies have been saying, let the Jewish people not even know that we're out to get them, until we come into their city and we somehow catapult them and get them to cease their project. They won't do any of the work anymore. So what we see here is that the enemies really assumed that we wouldn't even be able to know of their evil plans until we already attacked, and by then it would be too late for us to defend ourselves, and obviously the construction project would have been forcibly shut down. So as the Jews face this really increasingly violent opposition, like even bodily harm from these hooligans, the Jewish people's murmurings and fears really exacerbated to the point of a roar. Pasuk Vav. When the Jewish people who were near to these adversaries came, they told us 10 times over from all the places. So what's going on here? Rashi explains that those Jews who were traveling were encouraged by Nehemiah to spy out the opposition's intentions because they lived near them. And these Jews warned us as many as 10 times to wage war against our enemies, because otherwise they're going to attack us first. But there were traveling Jews who seemed to have overheard the taunters, and they had come to tell the neighbors that even if the whole Jewish diaspora would come back from the areas to which they had been dispersed, they would not be able to overcome the number of taunters right now. So they're really, it's like psychological warfare here, you know, real sarcasm and showing them how skeptical they are vis-a-vis the Jewish people's capacity. An interesting alternative explanation is offered here by the Dat Mikra, who says that the Jews who had dwelled really in peace among the other nations, mentioned earlier in this perek, specifically in the first verse of this chapter, they had come and they told the Jews who had dwelled in Jerusalem and in Judea all over, 10 times over, they kept saying to them, please come back to us, leave Jerusalem, leave the surrounding villages of Jerusalem, and come live in the places where we as Jews live amongst fellow Persians, in peace and in tranquility. So I think it's worth mentioning that historically, Jews always face these kinds of issues of like a dual loyalty. Even Napoleon was willing to emancipate the Jewish people so long as they had promised their loyalty in the French army. if, let's say, they would have to fire weapons against a Jew in the opposing British army, he was concerned that since Jews were living like a state within a state, he was unsure about where their allegiance would lie. And the Jews always responded to Napoleon. He even set up like a Sanhedrin, so to speak. The Jews responded that they would be loyal to the Empire of France, and they, as they call themselves, Frenchmen of the Mosaic persuasion. That yes, absolutely, they would be true to the French country, just like the Jews now in the time of Nehemiah promised somehow allegiance to Persia and what the agenda was, but at the same time are trying to protect themselves. Okay, so how does Nehemiah respond? Pasuk Zayin, Va'amid metachtiot la'makom v'acharei la'makom v'atzichim v'amid et'ami l'mishpachot. So essentially, when Nehemiah hears the newest taunts of the opposition, he states, at least according to Rashi, that he stationed very mighty men according to, you know, what was geographically desirable for them. So basically, a location near their respective homes, he lined them up along the perimeter of the wall building, so that they would be stationed to build where it made sense for them. And they were stationed with what? So they were basically given all different kinds of defense weapons, swords, spears, and bows. And Nehemiah lets us know in Pasuk Ched, I got up and I told the lay people, Velaskanim, and all the noblemen, Al tiru mipneim et Adonai hagadol v'anara. Don't be afraid from them. Instead, you need to remember Zechoru, remember Hashem, the great and mighty God. V'hilachamu alachechem b'nechem ubnotechem nesheichem ubatechem, and fight instead for your families and your homes. So what we see here is that Nehemiah is persistent and consistent. He responds again with tefillah, with faith, and with war preparation, and he prepares his soldiers from amongst the nobility and others in hiding places and in protected areas. He goes and he splits them up according to family so that they kind of have more of a reason to fight. They know who they're fighting for, and hopefully they will fight with more courage. Then Nehemiah offers them inspiration and chizuk, and he urges them to fight for these families. And for us, it's important to remember that people's self-interests are really what motivate their actions. So Nehemiah was exceptionally people savvy to know how to urge them, you know, to accomplish this mission. The aristocrats' participation here, I think, was important not only because of their seniority in Jewish society, but also because they were actually officials of the Persian court. And by including them, Nehemiah actually makes it doubly difficult for Sanballat and the other hooligans to attack the Jews, because that would mean assaulting officers of Persia. Once the Jewish people see that God actually did overturn the plans of the adversaries, as it says, "Vayafer Elokim atzatam," that Hashem overturned them, then the Jewish people return to the task of hand of constructing the walls, and it seems as though the enemies ultimately back off, since they see they see that their aggression is not effective enough to rattle the Jews. Okay, pasuk yud, "Vayhi min hayom ahu," from that day forward, "Chatzi ne'arai osim b'lamlacha," half of my men are completing the work, and half of the people are holding these weapons. So Nehemiah, as we said, divides his assistants, so to speak, into two groups, some of whom stand guard and others who build. And he manages, Nehemiah, to thwart the evil designs of these enemies, and then institutes a system so that both the wall would be built and the Jews building the wall would simultaneously be protected. And truly, this system is magnificent. And for us, in particular, I think it's reminiscent of the Shomrim and the early pioneers, or Chalutzim, they might be called, of the years of pre-state Israel, when Jewish people, prior to 1948, would plow their fields next to their guns, or they would build their walls with their guns at their side, almost like, you know, making sure that everything was tackled simultaneously. So the builders are holding, you know, their swords, which are girded on their waist, and at the same time they're building, and Nehemiah makes sure that whoever is going to blow on the shofar is nearby. Vomar, and I said to them, Hamalacha harbe urechava, the work is tremendous and so vast. Va'anachnu nifradim alachoma, we are spread so thinly along the perimeter of the wall. Rechokim mishmakiv, we're not standing near each other. Bimkom asher tishmu et kol hashofar, when the moment that you hear the sound of the shofar, shama tikvatsu elenu, elokenu ilachem lanu, if you hear the the call of the shofar, then you know that we're somehow, you know, it's like an SOS that we're sending out and quickly come towards us. But ultimately, tells us Nechemiah Elokeinu Yilachem Lanu, that Hashem will fight the battle for us. So in the meantime, Pasuk Tedvav, Anachnu Osim Bamalacha, we find out that the Jewish people continue to do their work. And half of them are holding their spears. Me'alot HaShachar, from dawn ad Seit HaKochavim, until the signal of nightfall, when the stars come out. Just as a side tangent, it's interesting that the Gemara in Brachos, the tractate of Bracho, uses this particular source or this phraseology, Me'alot HaShachar ad Seit HaKochavim, from dawn until nightfall. This is becomes a source to deduce Jewish law regarding what time the start of the day is. And we understand from this source that it's really first light of the day until the stars are out, not the way we previously may have assumed, which is sunrise to sunset. Okay, Pasuk Tatzayin, Gam ba'etahi amarti lam, and in that moment, Nechemiah tells us, he told the people, Ish v'na'ro yalinu b'toch Yerushalayim, people, we need to stay within the walls of the city of Yerushalayim, v'hayu lanu halayla mishmar hayom v'lacha, and we need to basically build and protect all night long until the work is done, no one is leaving. So, you know, altogether, if we summarize, Nehemiah really responds by establishing this guard duty throughout the course of the night without people entering and exit the city. And he gives arms to the citizens of Yerushalayim, inspiring them to be unafraid, to remember God, to fight on behalf of their families. And because his workers are spread really thin across the span of the wall, he even devised a system whereby if he blows the shofar, everyone rushes towards him and they defend against an enemy attack. So everybody knows that they're really going to be covered by their fellow. The very end of the perek tells us, "Ve'ein aniv achai une'arai v'anche mishmar asher acharai ein anachnu poshtim begadenu ish l'chomayim." We don't take breaks. Me and my brothers and my friends, you know, we're going to work until the work is done. So above all, Nehemiah is really a man of action. He moves at breakneck speed. He creates facts on the ground, whatever necessary to ensure the Jewish people's safety and that the mission will be accomplished. And he goes so far as to get his own hands dirty and build. He doesn't even, you know, he lets us know that he doesn't even stop to take a, you know, a drink of water as a break. So I think if we summarize, we can remember that, you know, back a couple of chapters, that at the founding convention, the people of Yerushalayim really agreed and they were inspired to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. But now that we see that the means to get this accomplished really had to evolve with the changing political climate, both because the opposition was external and internal. And Nehemiah brilliantly advises on how to move forward. And he knew that in addition to davening, which has to be first and foremost in their mind, the situation really calls for radical action. So when he devises all these activities to fight off the low morale, he's successful. He recognizes that, you know, good meetings somehow end with responsibilities laid out for everybody. Each person has a clearly delineated task that he's going to be held accountable for. And ultimately, he's successful because the hooligans really left them alone. Well, at least for our parak. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.